On this episode of Chicago Beer Pass, Bob from the Beer Bistro joins Nick and I to talk about some of the events, the parties he had at the location over the years, and how he deal with the current stay-at-home lockdown happening in Chicago and the United States. And then we talk about some of his plans for next location, concept, just what he's got going on. All that and more on this week's episode. Here we are, hitting up events, drinking our way through Chicago beer, and trying not to miss a thing.
Yeah, because, you know, got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
You know, all you have to do is add some fruit, stir it up, and ride that milkshake wave.
Whenever I see him, I got to take a photo with the most decorated brewer in Chicago, Jonathan Cutler.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to, every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this. Raw, raw, raw.
Sometimes you want a small beer, but really, you want a big beer.
You got to take in all those big, aromatic hops.
Hey, what are you doing this weekend? Waiting in line for a bottle release?
Should have never been a fad. The Black IPA is delicious.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass. I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we got a special phone-in guest joining us, Bob McDormand. What's up? How's it going?
Oh, hey guys, how you doing today?
Good, man. Good. Bob is Bob founded the Beer Bistro. Really one of the first beer bars I ever went to. Yeah. I think the Map Room, the Beer Bistro, Small Bar. That's on the short list of beer bars I got into when I first got into beer. Those are the bars I was at. Yeah. So definitely. It's nice to have you, man.
Well, thanks for coming.
Yeah, what's everyone drinking when they're quarantine life today?
Today I'm starting off with a Round the Bend Vera.
Nice.
But that is not. I've been having two or three decent beers each day, but my mainstay plug-away beer is I'm in love with the Bell's Lighthearted Ale.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't had that.
I was Founder's Easy Jack. Firestone Easy Jack all day, every day type of stuff. But the Lighthearted Ale is for real. I highly recommend it. Okay. I endorse it.
Nice. Well, I've got the Chicago Tavern beer from Haymarket. So nice and light.
That's
lager.
Tough. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's good.
I'm taking a slow ride on the
Whoa.
Pajamas. I broke out one of the this is in lieu of a cocktail, but yeah, I got my Kentucky Derby glass from my trip when I went down there.
Awesome.
To go. It's got the birth year on it. You know, just breaking out the old t-shirts, breaking out the old glassware.
Sure. I've consumed a lot, so I kind of thought, how do I get flavor and cut some calories? So, you know, it's the Lighthearted Ale on this end. It's that or trying to, you know, add a hop and shake up a bottle of water and call it light. So... I'm okay with this stuff.
Is the Around the Bend Vera, is that the one with the pistachio?
It's just pistachio cream, yeah.
Nice, yeah.
It's probably 3-4 months old at least. So not optimal time for consumption, but it is still a very good beer.
Nice, yeah, that was good. Cool.
I enjoy the products.
Yeah. Well, Nick, so you wanted to dive into some stuff about the early days of Beer Bistro and...
Yes.
Especially you being a hardcore Bulls fan there. And so
a lot of posts there. Now, Bob, there were two locations of your bistro, but the original one was in West Loop on Madison, right? Now, when did that get going?
September 7th, as a matter of fact, 2005. Long story short is that's when we opened. I saw the location originally probably in January of 2005. At that time, the current proprietors wanted an awful lot of money. But I had a broker. I was with a broker. I was like, show me everything. I'll decide if I can afford it or not. You know, I didn't give him a number because I didn't want to miss out on something. But this place was super high priced. And I saw it. I wanted to go back. I went back with some partners. We had gone back into it and taken a look, and we all fell in love with it. But as we started getting closer to, hey, this is going to be real, guys, let's get to work, you know, pen to paper, some of that fell apart. And then when it came time to make a real offer, it was just me. And I was committed. You know, I was pot in. I was ready to go. My current employer, I was burning both ends with them, working crazy, traveling crazy, also in the hospitality industry. But it was, I didn't agree with the way the corporation was going. And there was a lot of stuff being done that I didn't like, and quite a bit I was tasked to do. And I stopped doing it about 4 months before I started the bistro. So I opened up the Beer Bistro. I bought an existing place that was called Bliss and ran Bliss for 6 weeks and then finally shut it down. And then the next day the sign came and boom, the Beer Bistro was open.
Nice.
I don't even know that exact date. It was near my birthday. That's what I can remember. It was right around the time the White Sox won the World Series.
Oh, yeah.
Ozzy was in our bar between games. That was when they played two games within 24 hours and won it all. And that's when I found out Ozzy Guillen lived in the neighborhood. And I was like, oh, hey, cool. But that was the start of the Beer Bistro. It was myself, one manager, two bartenders, and four servers when we started. And then six guys in the kitchen. Like, total staff for the kitchen was six guys at that time. It evolved to quite a different animal.
Yeah, did you go in with the craft beer mindset or like the...
I did. I went into wanting to be a... I felt the craft beer was exploding. My last hospitality group I was working for, I opened a place down in Tampa. That was in 2002. And we had 120 beers on draft there.
Oh,
that was before anyone else was doing it. And I was like, I'm doing this. This is going to work. I know it's going to work, right? The profit margins are... So I got to test the business plan. Why not use someone else's money to test it? And we were in a mall there, and it killed it. It absolutely crushed.
Yeah, 120 beers in early 2000, like that. Well, it had been probably a lot of Belgian and like import kind of stuff, right?
I would love to say yes to that, but we were in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah.
At that location, and no, we had. About 80 beers, but there were a lot of duplicates, and it was, you know, the whole family here of Sam Adams, the whole family Lennon Kugels.
Oh, cool.
Well, you know, that kind of run to fill up tap handles, because as I wanted to do it, Chicagoland, and I could have gotten a bunch of stuff. Even the tap kegs down there were hard to come by. Mm-hmm. It was all packaged.
And are you from that way? Like, how'd you end up in Tampa? Where are you from?
I'm from Chicago, but that was part of the restaurant group I was working for. It was one of the locations we opened was down there, and it became under my task. So while they were in construction, I said, oh, make the bar 20 feet longer. Oh, you know, it's okay. I got it. I'll sign off on it. And it was almost like 2 years after I left that company that the owners had even stepped foot into that bar. So the bar was operating for almost 5 years till they even came there. So
okay.
I had no problem kind of teasing it the way I wanted it, and it worked out. Now, when I opened my own location, I didn't have the money to kind of do that. I didn't have the money or the space to put that much on draft. 120 beers on draft is you need space, a lot of space.
Yeah.
Just for the cooler would take up the entire basement of the building that I was in at the original Beer Bistro, and I didn't want to give up square footage because that's where you guys come in, right? I can't give up space unless you want to go sit in the cooler, and that's not very inviting nor enjoyable. You can be next to the beer. You can sit on the beer. You can't drink any from there, but hey, it was fun. I really enjoyed the Beer Bistro. I made great family friends from there. I look forward to the next it. I don't know what it is. It could be a Beer Bistro. It could be Bob's, it could be fine dining. I don't know right now.
Okay.
Especially the current world we're in, I don't think anyone really knows what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. There's some educated guesses, but who knows?
Yeah. Were you, like, with that location and being from Chicago, were you already a big Blackhawks fan? Like, that's kind of, you became like almost this, not really a sports bar, but a destination.
It was official Blackhawks.
Adjacent to it.
Right. I think we got the West Loop at pretty good timing. When I opened up in the West Loop, there was a lot of joints, a lot of dives or cop bars. And then there were, this is where the industrial workers go. This is where the printing press guys go. This is where the meat market guys go. But there was no neighborhood West Loop bar, right? There was a whole bunch of places on Randolph that were crushing it. A couple places on the south, closer to UIC, that did pretty well. Taylor Street always had a thing, but that whole middle of the West Loop really didn't exist. And the neighborhood really didn't exist. It was just buildings, random pockets. There was no real thing. So when I opened, that was my thing. I'm like, I'm going to be a neighborhood bar that has good beer. Okay. Right. And when we first opened, we had as many American craft beers as we can. But then we definitely rounded out with a lot of Belgians, a lot of German, Austrian, English, obviously, a couple French, and then some Spanish stuff too. We really, and then as the menu evolved, as American craft beer evolved, and as things picked up, you know, we never went Illinois centric like some places do. We never went all American, but we were definitely buying way more American craft beer in the 13 years we were open. The last 10 years were 80% was American craft beer we were buying.
Was that because people were asking for it, or because it was people easier were asking to come for, by?
People were asking for it. It was becoming better products. There was a lot of stuff we turned down. I was never one to buy it just because it's close, right, or buy it because one person asked for it, or three. You know, once three people ask, five people ask, eight people ask, and I've never heard of it. Well, shit, I got to pay attention. Who are these guys? Let's find them. Let's go find them and ask them to come in. At the same time, searching for those guys, right? Looking to find out a way to keep, what beers do we want to keep on? Who do we want to build relationships with? I had been with Goose Island previously. I loved Goose Island. John Hall, great man. Greg Hall's a good guy. So I was loyal to Goose Island, right? That was one of my staples. Didn't always have them on. We only had one beer on every single day except for tap takeovers at the Beer Bistro. There was one beer that was always on draft every day that wasn't on, you know, we even had special ones, and that was PBR.
Okay.
Of all beers. But then, you know, doing an autopsy, we figure out which beers did we sell the most of, you know, ranking, how many of what. And it's interesting to see what we sold the most of, right? What did we sell the least of? What did we always have on that really just didn't move, and why? And a lot of it's because I love that beer. Okay. Most of the consumption was me. Polinar Salvatore. Absolutely love that beer. Yeah. A great Doppelbach. And I think Patrick Berger brought it back up. He was drinking Doppelbachs during his Lenten beer fast. Or beer fast. It's a great beer. That's one of the original Doppelbachs. I absolutely love it. But it turns out I loved most of it at the Beer Bistro. So it's one of those beers you look back, like, we had it on the menu as often as we could. As if it was in the country, I had it.
Okay.
But yeah, Bell's Two Hearted, shockingly, was our number one beer sold, hands down. Tremendously. And then we didn't even have it for almost 4 years.
Right, right. When they left for...
We did have Kalamazoo IPA, Kalamazoo Brewing Company IPA, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Mm. But that doesn't count for Bell's Too Hard, because A, I wasn't paying Bell's Too Hard pricing, and B, I couldn't price it as Bell's Too Hard. So Bell's was our number one selling beer for 13 years. Not every year, but for the longevity of the time we were there.
That makes sense. That got, I think, so many people into craft beer and got people excited and was like, what? This can taste like this?
Yeah. And I actually, when we first opened the Beer Bistro, the neighborhood, it was construction workers because so much was being built, and it was neighborhood folk. And then we'd have the Bulls and the Blackhawk fans come through. And the Bulls and Blackhawk fans were nice, right? Because there's an extra 30 to 300 people, depending on the game, for 2.5 to 3 hours. They're coming in, they're spending money, they want to get out. Hey, come up. Awesome. Doors are open. We welcome you. And the construction workers, too. They come in, they want to drink. Hey, I got 20 bucks. Give me 10 High Lifes. No, man, it doesn't work like that. Right? Not anymore. And, you know, I slowly would change some of their palates to become better beer drinkers. the crazy thing, one of the first major beers we put on special was Bud American.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You remember that?
Bud American.
It was just amber Budweiser.
Yeah, it was like a dark Budweiser.
Yeah. And the Budweiser guys, right, they only drink Budweiser. They would check the dates on bottles. And this was before Budweiser even wanted to do that stuff. Like, they knew that they needed to check the dates. And these are blue-collar guys coming in for, you know, four or five beers after work. Okay. And they would check it, and I said, hey, try the Bud American. We'd have it on draft. Here you go. Awesome. This is great. This is great. Well, now suddenly that special's done. They're like, hey, let's get some more Bud American. Oh, I don't have any of that. But I've got this. Here's some Sam Adams. I've got this. Here's some, you know, and just slowly change them into better beer drinkers. they'd still have their two or three Budweiser, but they'd have two or three Bell's Amber, or two or three Rogue Dead Guy, or, you know, eventually now with Sierra Nevada Pale Ales. And now they're drinking beer, not just slugging back the macros.
Right.
And that helped. I mean, I think it was kind of the wave of the time, too. It was right when craft beer was really starting to churn. Half Acre was well planted in Chicago. Breweries were starting to – you were starting to hear about breweries. A lot of people were looking for licensing or trying to find a way to get their licensing. Mm-hmm. So that helped a lot.
I want to say this was around the time where Phobab moved from – I'm guessing it was started at Rock Bottom or Juice Wrigley or something, and then it moved to West Loop. To that gigantic, what was it,
Plumbers Hall.
Yeah, so it was a big deal. So you got the Beer Bistro up and running, you know, yep. 5, 6, 7 years in. And then, you know, you decide to open a second location. I'm trying to remember what year was that where the Beer Bistro North opened?
Ooh, I should know that by the top of my hand, right? That was 2010.
Okay.
2010, 2012, somewhere in 2012, actually, yes. No. Yeah. I don't know. I can look it up. I should know.
That was an interesting play because I want to say that was small bar.
It was a small bar.
Small bar, correct.
And before that, I think it was that location was in The Color of Money, that movie with
That's correct. It was St. Paul's Billiards. That's where Vincent danced around in the beginning, where Paul Newman comes in and sees him dancing around and playing, and where that pool table scene was shot was the woman's washroom.
Oh. Yeah, both. That's an interesting play. Both busy streets. I think Madison and then Fullerton.
Yeah.
Compare that experience to the original location experience.
Different animals.
Yeah.
In the West Loop, here's a theory I have, and I still hold true to it. Generally, in Chicago, we head east when we go to do things. Right, we head to the nearest pub east. We generally don't cross busy streets, right? We're not traveling, generally, we're not traveling 4 miles to just go get a snack or a beer and a burger, right?
Okay.
Nick, you know, I go to Toons. I live pretty close to Toons. I live closer to Long Room, a great beer bar, but I'll go to Toons 6 out of 10 times. Then I go to Long Room just because I head east, and I live west. It's in my, I don't know, a Pavlovian, I guess. But I love going to Long Room. I'll go drink at Long Room. I love the food. The Biscuit Man's got some great food going over there. And I think that's just the way it is. In the West Loop, we were the heart dead center of that neighborhood, and downtown heads west to go to the United Center. We just happen to be halfway between downtown and the United Center. And then we also had a shuttle bus that would take you there. Mm-hmm. The season was wintertime, right? It's hockey and basketball. It's not springtime until late in the year. And by then, hopefully you've been a regular long enough. You know when the bus is coming. You know when to hop on. You know when to get in, have a beer and, you know, a pizza. Come by and enjoy yourself. That was a good hook we had. We shared the bus with Carmichael Steakhouse, which was great because they had a giant garage, so we always stayed warm and it stayed dry. Didn't have to unshovel the snow off of it. Where other guys would have to spend 2-3 hours just cleaning up their bus, we were good. We had it indoors.
Is that still there? That's the because that's the spot where Festival was, right? The big Carmichael's behind Beer Bistro on Madison?
That's long gone. That was gone 2013, maybe. That whole restaurant closed and tore down. Now it's a 400-unit condo building.
We're old men, Nick. We remember these days.
Yeah,
it's gone. It's condos. Out of here.
Condos. Yep. It took them a long time to build it, but it's up and it's occupied and it's going.
The Beer Resort North, you had that college group, but they're not heading that way.
Yeah, well, and it's a different animal. The college kids, boy, I'm really going to sound old. Get off my grass. when I went to college, I had $20 in my pocket. So did my roommate. So did our buddies, right? And we would collect it and we'd get $80. And that was our weekend party money, right? And we would get whatever alcohol we could. We'd get some beer. We'd get a couple bottles of booze. Maybe we got other paraphernalia to enjoy ourselves as well, legal or not. But that was our weekend, right? And then we all had $5 or $10 in our pocket to go buy burritos when the bars closed.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not going home with a significant other, go home with a burrito. That was kind of art, right? So late night eating. Well, the last couple years, I would even say, I guess it's Generation Z. I'm not really sure. Millennials. I'm not really sure which generation exactly was. But they were more body conscious. They were more concerned about what they were putting in their bodies.
Yeah.
They didn't eat late night. As you can kind of even see near DePaul, there's no late night burrito places anymore. They're all gone. There used to be one every other inch. Now there's one.
Okay.
It's just a different person going through college. They are actually studying. They're not just there for the party. which is good on the overall message of our society. They also, some of the students that did come in, of what we got for DePaul, it was mostly grad students. So they were adults. They knew what they were doing. We did try to cater to a slightly older crowd, if you would. I don't want to drink with a bunch of 21-year-olds. I would hope you wouldn't want to drink with a bunch of 21-year-olds. Yeah, no. So I'm going to run a place as if we're not going to have a bunch of 21-year-olds, right? The lights might have been a little too bright. That keeps some kids out, right? It's a strange thing, but if it's not dark and going, kids, stay away.
Yeah, it's less shots being consumed.
Well, I like shots being consumed. I just like them, you know, not out of a test tube or glowing green.
Yeah.
I enjoyed both locations. The neighborhood is very good at Beer Bistro North near Fullerton and Southport. It's a different neighborhood. Used to be three flat buildings. Now they're single family homes. Where in a three flat, you had 3 to 6 people going out every night to drink and eat. In a single family home, you have a husband, a wife, or a couple, and potentially a child, and all three of them are not going out to eat every night.
Yeah.
So the turn happens. West Loop is a little more entrepreneurial, a little younger. And some older clientele too, but still very young at heart, if you would. Still went out often. They lived in 1,200 square foot condos. They had to leave their home. They would work. A lot of them worked from home. They had to get out of their house. We were happy to be their respite. Come on in. We're here for the neighborhood. Everyone that came in, what do you need? Sure, I got it. What do you need? I got it, right? I bartend for the first couple years at the Beer Bistro, 5 nights a week sometimes, just to make sure we actually have it. Be nice. That's the hardest part of this industry is just be nice. Yeah, you're cool. You are bartending at a great place. You know how to make great drinks. You have great alcohol and great booze and beer you can sell. Be nice about it.
Right.
It's in really anything in life. Just be nice about it. If you're going to come off and be stodgy or be kind of be a dick, like you don't know how to pronounce that beer, you can't have it. You know, here's your Miller Lite. Like, whoa. Don't wait. I'm trying to learn about the beer. Help me.
Yeah.
You're my, you know, you're the guy in charge. Help me learn. Be my ambassador to craft beer.
Totally.
And that's really what we tried at the Beer Bistro. Just be nice.
Yeah. A little less snob, a little more geek, a little more celebration than like,
we're hosting a party every day. Right. And these guys made great beer. I bought the beer. Now you get to sell the beer. Let's go do that.
Yeah.
Right. You are in sales. You're an actor. Great. Go act. So that's how I kind of put the service function in and I kind of the mindset. I wanted people to understand that we want to have fun, right? But we're going to have fun properly. Let's make our money, then we can have some fun. It's not just crack open beers. Let's all do shots all night.
As a bar owner, do you have, you know how like on, I'll compare it to ballparks, right? You know how like up north at where the Cubs play, it's like it's more of a Bud House, right? And down south, there was a little bit more of a Miller House. Like as a bar, are you partial to like certain, we'll say distributors, are you partial to more distributors than others? You have like tighter relationships, you just prefer one crew versus the other, or how does that work when you're buying beer?
When you're buying the beer, it absolutely is a thing, right? And depends on where you were. Now, I'm very close with a lot of the guys that at that time were higher ups, VPs, or even presidents of Chicago Beverage. But we are literally half a block away from the end of their territory. Monroe, south of us, is the end of their territory. Racine, just west of us, is literally the edge of their world. So they didn't have all the United Center. Eventually, they got the United Center. But so we didn't get as much love shined onto us. Where River North moved their offices to two blocks away from us. So we became the stopping ground for Yusuf Jackson. And I mean, they had meetings there. They had business decisions there.
And this is the crew that I think they're now they're Lakeshore Beverage, I think, right?
Now they're Lakeshore Beverage. All right. And they had offices in the West Loop. I'm assuming they're still there now, but I'm not certain. Good guys. I wasn't partial one way or the other. When I first opened the doors, I was about 80% Union Beverage. For my what beer I was buying, because they had most of the craft beer at that time. Okay. When Union broke up, a lot of it went to Glunns. Some of it went to Windy City, but most of it ended up going to Glunns. Some to Chicago Beverage. That was the whole Bell's breakup thing, yeah. Right? Bell didn't want to be part of a Miller House at that time, so Kalamazoo Brewing Company came in. So whatever year that was, Union went away. And then I bet you I bought over the whole course of the time, it was pretty equally split between Wirtz Beverage. Windy City at the end was definitely had the lion's share of our beer list. Glunns had quite a bit, even though their portfolio kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
And they were really into those imports, but then a lot of brands would like start at Glunns and then just take off. Like
start at Glunns and then figure out the city and then move on. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, some of it's how you treat your salespeople. Some of it's who you train your salespeople with. And the Windy City, when it was smaller and it was like the Bad News Bears, they really put a lot of energy and a lot of money behind training their salespeople because they weren't just beer people. They were salespeople. Right. They understood how to sell. They do a lot of things right. At least the in my time with Windy City, I had three beer reps. That's it. In 13 years with Windy City. And those guys were phenomenal. Four beer reps, I guess. Phenomenal. Phenomenal sales guys. And you know, they got me. They understood my alpha personality and they played to it. They let me pretend like I was in charge of stuff. But at the end of the day, I'm giving them a check every week.
Yeah.
Right. So that's how that rolled.
Nice.
I carried Miller Lite. I carried Bud Light. I carried, you know, High Life. I carried Budweiser because I wanted to be encompassing, especially with guys going to the United Center. Five guys are going out drinking. Four of them, maybe two of them, one guy only drinks Budweiser. One guy really doesn't care. Three guys are craft beer guys. They want to check out the Beer Bistro. They come in. They're going to get something.
Yeah.
Right. Have a menu. The Budweiser guys only drinking Budweiser. And if I don't have Budweiser, five guys walk out the door. Three of them begrudgingly. Now, they might come back, but that other guy has sworn off my place and told the world about it. Probably went on Yelp and, you know.
He doesn't have what I want. Yeah. He sucks. Right. Yeah.
How dare a bar not carry Budweiser? That kind of
thing.
Oh my God, I only have 100 other choices. But that guy matters. And even craft beer guys, when they go out drinking, if they don't have something you want, then you get a whiskey or you get a cocktail, right? We're the variety that's out there in craft beer, those is also in the same people. It's in the humans that drink it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I'm out just looking for a pastry stout and I demand a bar have one, who am I? Right? That's not who we are. Now, maybe I saw an advertisement or you said it's on special, so I'm coming for it. And if you're out of it, I'm going to pout, but I'm still going to drink beer.
Yeah.
Right? And I'll probably find a sweet shot to go with my beer, so I pretend to fool myself that, yeah, I'm having this super, super stout. But that's on me to do.
Yeah.
Right. It's not the bar to reproduce something they can't get more of. And there's far too many people don't understand. It's not, there's just not an endless supply of this stuff.
Yeah. I know.
It's just sprouting out of the corner from everybody. Yeah. Jewel has it forever because they bought way too much. But that's Jewel's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Have it.
If I go out and I like have something in my mind that I want, I'll have like a couple fallbacks that maybe like, yeah, I know they're going to have, because if they don't have these, this thing I want, I'm gonna get that and then I'll think about it. Like I just,
right,
you have to, do you have to start, and then once that messes up your plan, you gotta like then think, yeah, about it longer.
Right, I know that if I really wanted this amazing IPA, they're gonna have other IPAs. Right. And if I have one and it's not as good as what I think I was supposed to have, all it does is make me feel good about me. Yeah. I was right. I should have had that better idea. But I'm still at their bar spending money.
True.
Right. So good for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sports made a difference in the West Loop, it, you know, 82 days a year. And if you think about it, that's really all it was 82 days. And that's, oh, if they were good days. And then as a Blackhawks took off, their best days, the Red Wing game, stuff like that, kept getting moved. They moved them to Soldiers Field, or they moved them to Wrigley Field, or they moved them to Notre Dame or whatever. And these are like New Year's Day. Everyone's, yeah, off. We're going to be jam-packed all day long for a Red Wings Blackhawks game. Like, we need extra security. It's going to be amazing. And then they're, oh no, we're playing at Wrigley Field. Wait, what? Mm-hmm. No one's coming to our bar before a game at Wrigley Field at noon on New Year's Day. You know, those kind of things, like, oh man, you got us. But also, didn't plan our business on those 82 days a year, right? You can look in Wrigleyville, even now, a lot of these places close all winter long, and they're only open during the baseball season. There are some places in the West Loop that should probably consider that if they can afford that rent. They probably can't, but they only do business during those 82 days of business. Okay. So.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit, Brad and I, in the pregame about, you know, if a bar like the Beer Bistro was open today, how would you go about handling, you know, the shelter in place? Like, is it a liquidation? Do you sell everything? Do you have people? Do you do carry out? Do you do curbside? Like, what would your approach be in this climate?
I'm pouring another beer.
Yeah, man.
If I'm Beer Bistro West Loop and I'm still open, I'm probably going heavy for delivery. I'm asking anyone on my staff who wants to drive for delivery, let's go do it. You're a server, you have a car, let's do it, right? Mm-hmm. And I know my busboys, a couple of the busboys would probably be doing it. Let's get out in the neighborhood. Let's pass out flyers for black and white pizza. Like, let's what do we have? Let's get active. And I would tell them, look, for the first month, let's figure out what the dollar situation is. And because we're trying to survive, and you guys, if you're really going to put the effort in to help me, at the end of the month, I'm going to show you all the numbers. We're going to pay our rent, we're going to pay our insurance, and then let's all split the money at the end. Right. That's great and idealistic the way I say it right now. That's on the assumption we did that kind of business. It's still hard to know. I think we would have been pretty well off. I think I would hope I would take care of my staff in some way. I couldn't give them all the money they make during that time. We had great, great customers, you guys included, and you were really good to my staff. So there's no way I can keep up with their income constantly. We had a good staff. So I would fill growlers until the tap was empty. I would not put more beer on.
Okay.
At this time. And then I would clean that line. Empty, you know, fill it with water, basically, at this time. I don't know if I would buy more draft beer yet. Especially now we're almost a month deep on this, right? It was just after St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
So a full month deep. If I still had beer on draft at this point, I'm hanging up late drinking it. I want it out of the lines.
Okay.
Not that it necessarily go bad, but let's get it out of the beer line. I would sell bottles and cans to go. I would try to figure out a worthy price, but what's worthy, all right? Or is it, are you just selling a six pack and that guy's tipping $100, which is great. Thank you. And that guy feels good about himself for taking care of his neighborhood bar. $100 isn't paying anyone's rent. It's not, right? The server, the person who did that transaction to go is very happy about it. But unless 25, 30 people come do that, they're not paying rent. Mm-hmm. They're not paying their bills. And that's a lot to put on the customer, to put on the guest. So it's hard. I've thought about this too. How would I go about doing this? And that's why I kind of thought I would do a to-go business and get really active. How many cars can I run out of that alley? Mm-hmm. Right. Let's pump pizza.
Would you
sandwiches? Let's keep that menu going. What can we do? You know, I'm certain my staff would have ideas of ways to help make money as well.
Mm-hmm. Would you? We're at this month now. It would have to be worth it in some degree to like keep it going, right? Like into month two. Yeah. Like I think that's correct. What a lot of businesses are going to run into for this month two. We saw Peace close.
Peace close, and some of it is because they like, hey, insurance guys, we can't pay. Why are we paying insurance for a whole place that it's not even open and operating?
Yeah.
Right. And we're paying a lot of insurance. And one of those things, like, well, if you closed, you don't have to pay by the government. The state of Illinois is giving everyone, hey, if you're not open for business, we're going to demand your insurance company take off your premium for that month.
Oh, okay.
Now that they don't have to add it to the end of your insurance policy, right? And they don't have to renew you. There's no demand of renewing. So it's a chance you take on either side.
Okay.
I would hope we do enough business just to cover our nut. But that's still a fair amount of money. And without selling the beer and the day-to-day business itself, it would be hard because we're not open for lunch. We're not, you know, it would be open from 4 to 9 o'clock type thing.
Sure.
Right. Maybe if enough demand was there, we'd open for lunch for a couple to-go orders. But it's just a couple to-go orders. You know, it's a couple $100 to fire up the equipment.
Yeah.
And then you still got to pay staff to do the work. So it's a sticky wicket to be in. You know, it's hard to be the neighborhood bar if you're not open for the neighborhood.
Right.
At the same time, if I can't afford being open, I got to do what's best for the business. I'm not trying to hurt the neighborhood. And I would think enough people would recognize that. So it's a sticky wicket. It's a definite who knows.
Do you think some of these bars have, like Nick was mentioning, Wrigley, some of these bars close for the winter, or you said like Madison area, like so they know or they have planned for like, well, we might not be busy at this time. Can we shift that to this time now?
Right. They just flat out close.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these places are monstrosities. They're gigantic places and they hire you and they tell you flat out, hey, you're seasonal.
Yeah.
The season's over. Right. We're not firing you. We're just laying you off. That way you can't get unemployment. Right. We're going to put you off to the end of next season because you're always a seasonal employee. So who knows? It's it is what it is.
Yeah.
Right now it'd be hard to say. To be truthfully honest, I was going down the road. I'm looking for a location. I have three great locations that I want to open tomorrow. Obviously I'm only going to open one of them, but I was going down doing the dance with all of them to see what's going to be best for me, for my finances, for a concept I can put in there, into the location. And
you look at Northwest side, Northwest side, West Loop, South Shore, where are you looking?
City of Chicago.
In the city, yeah.
Inside the borders, in the 606. That's all I'll say.
But now, you don't know what that looks like moving forward, right? Like, what's a bar? Well,
that,
look like.
Not that, but an SBA loan is almost impossible to get right now if you don't have a business.
Okay.
Because everyone that does have a business is standing in line. And they should. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But the SBA has told lenders, hey, no new business until all old business is done. Don't bring us new business. Like, we have to handle what we got first. Yeah. And that's going to be 80% of companies, if not more, on the assumption they have some money to put into an SBA, right? You still have, for an SBA loan, you have to put down 20%. So, yeah, they'll give you $500,000, but you got to put down $100 million on that loan, oh. Right? And the guy, these guys that are hurting don't have the $100 million to put, $500,000, they got to put down $100,000, you know, 20%. And they've lowered it. I think in some cases they've lowered it to 11% you have to put down. You're still asking a bar guy to put in 55 grand. Does he have it or not? I don't know.
Yeah.
Depending on the business. That's going to make a big difference. And let's look at the other side of it. Unless you're buying the building. And if you do buy a building, is a bank going to lend you money to open a restaurant in a building that they own?
Yeah.
Before this happened, it was a maybe, you know, depending which lender you went to, it was probably about 60-40 you were going to get a no. Now, I got it. Who knows what it's going to be? I got to think it's going to be closer to 80-20 no.
Yeah, it's got to be up there because they don't know, well, what happens if there's second wave and you have to shut down again? Then you're not going to pay us.
And if you're a landlord, do you want a restaurant in your location? Mm-hmm. You can get more rent from them, yes, but what's the chance? And are you demanding a 1 year security deposit? No one starting a business can give someone a 1 year security deposit. Oh, here's a year rent on a float.
Okay.
Thanks, right? Here's 75 to 120 grand. Thanks, we'll talk to you soon. Right? Love doing business with you. Thanks for the keys. So now I can, you know, I've just hand strung myself to start my own business. So,
that's a lot. Yeah, a lot to think about if you're starting to think about a restaurant or a bar at this time. Yeah, man.
Yeah, and then what's the insurance gonna look like? The amount of ridiculous insurance stuff the city already adds to it. You have to have terrorism as a part of your policy in the city of Chicago on Dram Shop. Well, there's no chance that any terrorist act is going to affect the building I'm in, but I can't get paid unless the terrorist act happens on that property, not in the general city. And then when you get government who declares it an act of God, which is what Pritzker has done for COVID, well, now insurance is off the hook. Now I don't have to pay because it's an act of God. And all policies say, look, if that's an act of God happens, we can't be held responsible for that.
Oh, wow.
Which is fair. If a true act of God happens, right? So, I don't know. It's just a, you know, legalese. That's why I like drinking beer and not trying to figure that stuff out.
So are you feeling better off that you're not in anything right now?
It's a six of one, half dozen of the other. I really like, I love hosting the party. I love getting a staff that's just clicking perfectly. I love a kitchen that is just putting food out properly at all times. And when all that comes together, the symbiotic sound of that to me is magnificent. I absolutely love it. How and what? And, you know, it's not an easy thing to do, but when it happens, everyone looks back and is like, ooh, dude, right? It's 1 o'clock in the morning. We're about to make last call. We haven't had issues. Food was right, right? And I think a lot of industry people are like, well, I'm going to have a beer. I earned it. Instead of walking around and shaking a hand or high-fiving somebody and saying, dude, you guys kicked ass tonight, right? I myself included. How many times did I not give my staff enough credit? Now I can't give them enough credit only because I don't see them and I miss them, right? Right. So although my staff would be different today as it was 3 years ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I got.
Cool. I don't know. Nick, you got any other thoughts or questions?
Fire questions away, guys.
No, it was a lot of cool moments in that joint. And I saw you at Tunes, and that's when I thought, yeah. Man, you know, it'd be nice to just have an episode where we just kind of discussed a little bit of what used to happen back then. Because I remember, the planning committee for Festival met at Beer Bistro. And then, you know, aside from the games and aside from, like, you know, pregame for Phobab, you know, and then, Marty Nachel and I, we used to, you had this locker program in the basement. Marty Nachel and I used to go down there and do this blind tasting down there. Or, like, if the university wanted to talk and they were doing something about beer, we'd be like, well.
Yeah, we had some great, very cool events.
Because on that strip, you know, it was something you could believe in on that strip. All these other spots were like cocktail bars and sushi and all this other shit. But if I just want to go to a proper beer bar, you know, it was always there. So
we were always, we were there and we were open, right? We were closed 5 days a year. That's it. We enjoyed it, enjoyed the hell out of it. And, you know, I remember the first time we did a tap takeover, a lot of regulars like, hey, let's use your bus. Let's go down to Three Floyds. Let's go drinking. And I was like, that's a great idea. Absolutely. Let's pick a night and let's go on a Saturday morning. And I was like, you guys have never been to Three Floyds. you're fools. First off, we can't all go in at once. They're not going to let us. Right. And you can't come talk to me. There's no standing allowed. What do you mean there's no standing allowed? There's no standing allowed. They have a rule. Right. You can't hang out from your table behind my bar stool and have a conversation with me. For a minute or two, sure. But then it's move along or sit down. Right.
Yeah.
They have their rules, and I can respect their rules. So I kind of got a little greedy, and I said, hey, Lincoln. Lincoln Anderson was our Floyd's guy at the time. And I said, how many beers can I get for a one-day event? I just want 6 barrels. If I need to buy half barrels, I will. But I want to have 3 Floyds on draft, as many as possible. And he said, well, the pub has, I think they have 12 on at any time at the pub. I don't even know, to be honest, anymore. And I said, that's great. I have right now, I have 24 draft lines. Can I get 24 different beers? And he's like, no. I was like, all right, that's fine. I mean, I want to buy them all. I'm not getting anything, right? The only thing I want from you is tap handles. I'm buying the beer. I want it all at once. And I have to buy it over 3 months. I will, but I don't think you want me selling stale old beer. And Lincoln did what Lincoln does. And suddenly he's like, look, this is what it's going to cost. And I was like, okay, ship it. Right.
Yeah.
Went to Glunz and it came to me, and here we got, hey, we got 22 different Three Floyd beers. I was like, holy shit. Now what? So now we got a plan. We busted it for a month. Like, how are we going to serve them? I don't know. You know, and I just said, look, we have a lot of beer. We want to move all of it tonight. That's our goal. And we changed all the handles, the Three Floyd handles. We hyped the hell out of this night. It was February 20th. I can't tell you what year, but I do remember it was February 20th. Because that was the date on my fake ID growing up. So I always remember that. And it was a thunder snow night. Like, it was a huge snowstorm happened. We were selling 10 ounce for $4 and pints for $8, no matter what beer you got.
Okay.
And the whole idea is you're going to buy probably 5 or 6 10 ounces and you're good to go. Well, people just started hoarding. They're like, hey, I got all 20 right here. And, you know, Instagramming pictures or, you know, Facebooking stuff. And I was like, guys, I need the glassware back. Like,
yeah.
We don't have glassware for this. And it was a great night. And we sold every single ounce of beer that night before midnight. We opened the doors at 5 for this tap takeover. And by midnight, we had gone through 20 barrels of beer.
Holy shit.
Okay. Only 6 of them were half barrels. All the rest were quarter barrels, 6 barrels. But that's still a lot of beer for our place.
Mm-hmm.
It was really nice to see that deposit money come back, though, because that ain't cheap. it was a very nice night. Now, we didn't have the best profitability on all the beer. We didn't make a killing on all the beer. But, the Beer Bistro was trending on Twitter. I don't even know how that really happens. But suddenly, I was like, oh, shit, I should sign up for Twitter. Right? Here we go. That's how it all happened.
What were some of your other favorite nights at the Madison location?
Oh, man. St. Patrick's Day was always a special night just because I would dress like a clown and we had a good time. Mm-hmm. I guess it was more of a special day than a night because by the nighttime I was almost blacked out. We always did, we had that big beer list. And we started off year 2. We had a lot of regulars who were like, hey, we're coming to your bar. Our wives are all going shopping the day after Thanksgiving, and we're coming to you. So be open. I'm like, okay. So the next year, let's make this an event. Let's make this like a leave your kid, like daddy daycare, but actually just for the dads. And then we made it a beer list thing. Like when you walked in the door for $25, you drank all afternoon if you wanted, but you didn't get a choice of what you drank. Wherever we were on the beer list, alphabetically, that's what you drank.
Yeah.
So the first guy that walked in got an A beer, then an A beer, then an A beer, right? Until we went through all the A's and then the B beers and then the C beers. And then every so often, I put a landmine in there. Like everyone that's on the thing is getting a shot of Malort. Or everyone's getting a shot of Jameson. And, you know, that, and we just kind of put landmines in there. And it, probably by the 10th year, we had over 120 people in there drinking just the beer list. And we went through the beer list almost 9 times that day by 5 p.m. It was fun. It was a great way also to rotate all the stock. Right? You go through it all, get to buy some more. Looks good for December. The salespeople are happy. That was always a fun event. Obviously, the Blackhawks winning. That was special every time. Parade days were awesome. Stanley Cup popping in was pretty awesome. That was unexpected and unannounced. And, you know, we got a lot of the local sports celebrity, a lot of radio people, because when Harpo was right there.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Harpo staff would come in for lunch, and they'd call ahead and be like, hey, we got 40 people. Here's our order. Okay. Because they had half an hour, and they couldn't spend 20 minutes waiting for their food and then walk back, right? They wanted to eat. They wanted to sit. Okay. They said, if you can take our pre-orders, we'll come in. All right. Absolutely, we'll take your pre-orders. but that also led to them telling, you know, we had a fair amount of celebrity come through. And it was often during the day when no one was in there. I remember always giving John Paxson a hard time because he's a Heineken drinker. And I'm like, why do you drink that stuff? Like, eventually, we actually didn't even carry it at the end. Like, no one else wants it, man. Like, you're the one. Nobody drinks this stuff. And I'd get, you know, I'd get him into Trumer, got him into Stiegel for a little while, but he still had his Heineken.
Good old number 5, Johnny Pax, man.
Yeah. Yep. Good on the not the greatest coach, not the greatest front office guy. No. Love his passion. Love his passion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that he got his head shaved at Solo Salon right next door the first time he came in. He's like, what do you think? And I was like, who the hell are you? And I'm like, oh, my God, that's John Paxson. Like, geez. It was funny. At least the first time I saw him with a head shave. I don't know if it was his first shaved head. But what some of the special days I loved. Craft Beer Week was always a fun time. Some of those events we did. I really enjoyed when we did an ex Goose Island event. So the brewers that had left Goose Island opened their own brew pub. We did an event and we had 21 different brewers come. John Hall came, Greg Hall came. That was nice. You know, there's not really bad blood between a lot of these guys.
Right.
So yeah. It was really nice. And you know, we had Matthew Brindleson there. We, you know, obviously all the local guys, you name it. It was like, whoa, look around. This is like a who's who. It's kind of neat. Garrett Oliver showed up that night. He was at the Publican for something. So he came down because he heard about the event. And I'd known Garrett quite a bit. I'd seen him because we were doing a Brooklyn house beer for a while, like a seasonal house beer thing with Brooklyn. So he came by and it just happened to be that same night. So all the brewers were like, how'd you get Garrett here? And I was like, I have no idea. Like, I didn't get him here. He came. but you know, we really were just a West Loop bar that had a great craft beer list, right? We didn't make our own beer. We made all the food. We served all the beer. And that's kind of how we took at it, how we ran with it.
It was a great place. Always excited by the list whenever it was in there and whatever, like all the events that kept coming up, it was like, oh, that sounds awesome. Can I make it? Like, it was right.
And you know, the tap takeover turned into the Flock Evasion with Goose. Uh-huh. It turned into, we did a tap takeover with Duval, Oma Gang, and Boulevard, I think, right when they launched in Chicago. That was a lot of fun. Of course, they were telling me, you should get some Firestone. And that was before that whole thing happened. And then boom, all of a sudden, I was like, oh, I should have known. Oh, well. there was a lot of fun nights. My 1 year anniversary is the night I least remember being there because I consumed a significant amount of beer and alcohol that evening. It's 1 year anniversary is a huge thing for a restaurant. It's a big number to get to. And we were in good shape. And the first 6 months were rough. I won't lie to you. Like there were, I didn't take a paycheck for the first 4 months. It was lean. And then I don't know what, I don't know how, I know when, it was right. My daughter was being born. My daughter came prematurely, 8 weeks prematurely. My wife was in one hospital. My son was in a hospital. They thought he had an infection, which he turned out he didn't, but they were keeping him a few nights. He was only 20 months old. My dog was dying. And that same week we had like a Madonna concert, 2 bowl game and a Bruce Springsteen concert, like back to back to back to back to back. And that first night for the Madonna concert, we got our ass handed to us. That was our very first concert too. And we had no idea what was going to happen. We were just ready for a busy Bulls night. We hadn't had any Blackhawk nights yet because they were on strike during this season, right? They weren't there our first year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we had no idea what to expect. And we got our asses absolutely handed to us by Madonna and their crowd. I mean, we comped 85% of pregame. Literally thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. I was like, oh, man. We have to. Like, we're burning everything, if it's even coming out of the kitchen. Drinks are being spilled. Nothing was going right. Like, it was just chaos upon a chaos. And there nothing could get done right. I was just comping things left and right. And the next 3 nights, I was like, all right, we're selling chicken sandwiches. We're selling burgers. We're selling pizza. That's it. Here's your mini menu. This is what we're selling. Kitchen, this stuff has to come out within 20 minutes or I have to kill you all. You're fired. Okay, we got it. We got it. We got it, right? And it all came out. It was good. We got through it. And then people were just nice to us. Like when we were behind the eight ball with that Madonna concert, I'd go to tables and say, I'm sorry. I have no other excuses. We dropped the ball tonight. We're a new restaurant. We didn't know what to expect. And it's 100% my fault. No one else here is at fault. It's 100% me. I'm the owner. It's mine. I'm buying your dinner. Thanks for coming in. I hope you give us another chance. And shockingly, they all did. Not all of them, of course, but a lot of them did. And that led to us just suddenly going from not doing much business to our best Friday nights were what our Mondays are now, right? When we first opened, our Friday night, our busiest night of the week, was what our Monday lunches were at the end. Oh, like, wow. We were doing great business. And we were fortunate. And I don't claim it's because of one night that we screwed up so badly, but I will claim it's one night because I didn't let anyone else feel that pain. Yeah. It was my business. I didn't let my staff be put upon because of that. Mm-hmm. Right? Hey, you would have had $1,200 in sales tonight. You made $16. Here's the money. Right? You're that important to me. I messed up. I didn't staff enough. It's my fault that you lost the money. Let me take care of you. Because in the long run, what's $120 to the business? Nothing.
Right. Did you ever float the idea of having a brewery? Had the Beer Bistro expand to a brewery? That's happened before, bars converting to breweries.
Yeah, I thought about it. I've kind of explained this. The easiest way for me to explain is, like, the three of us want to have a dinner. You want to bring your wives, your girlfriends. I can make the six of us amazing steaks. And it'll be a great meal. I can't make steak for 600. I don't know how to do it. Right? I can homebrew a good batch of beer. I can't do it on a massive scale. I have no idea how to do it. And as much as I'd want to hire a brewer, pay a brewer right, get everything going right, you're only as good as your brewer. If your brewer is suddenly like, hey, I want to hold you hostage, pay me $400,000 a year, or I'm going to disappear and take all my staff with me and break all your equipment. Right? If that happened, oh, shit. Right? Now I'm SOL. I have nothing. I didn't want to be that guy. And then as I was considering it, all right, let's think about this. I had a few friends who opened a brewery, and it didn't last very long. I won't mention their names, Slapshot. But the love them to death, but I saw firsthand some of the things, absolute decisions I would have made as well, that didn't work out right. And then you turn around and look, and there's a brewery every other zip code. Like, yeah. let's back up a little bit. Maybe we missed the bubble, right? We didn't get inside the protective net of safety. So I didn't open a brewery only because there were a lot happening. And it's not – I can sell beer, and I can tell you what I want to drink in beer, and I can tell you what the beer that someone else makes tastes like. I can't say that I can make that beer the same every time. Therefore, I didn't want to invest in that. I love the scale of it. I've seen many business plans for beer. Mm-hmm. It works. It doesn't work for me.
Makes sense.
So.
Cool. Well, Bob, thanks for taking the time to chat with us. This is great. It's fun getting people that, you know, we don't always have people on in the studio or recording with us. It's great to the stay at home is allowing us to have some other people call in and chat with us. This is great.
Yeah, anytime. I'd love to chat with you guys. I love it.
Yeah, so, that was cool, man. I like reliving that. It takes my mind off of things just to sit up and talk about West Loop.
Get back to the safety spot.
Yeah, exactly. So I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. If you need anything from me, you know where I'm at.
Sounds good. And yeah, be sure to follow Chicago Beer Pass on Twitter. New episodes going up all the time. Nick and I are looking for new people to chat with, and we're always picking up new beer, you know, help supporting the breweries, supporting local places. And yeah, we'll be back soon. Take care.
Awesome. Talk to you guys. Bye.
Cheers.